I'm going to read one verse to you, and you won't need to turn to it. Just one verse. Colossians chapter 3, verse number 23 says this, "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men." My aunt, when I was growing up, had a bulldog. Somebody's got gas over there, I guess. My aunt had a bulldog. Believe it or not, she named her bulldog Buttons. Kind of a strange name for a bulldog, huh? So it was Buttons the Bulldog. Boy, did I love that bulldog. I'd go over there and visit. I hate to say this. Now, if you checked in the front of Brother Hiles' Bible, he has a picture of Mrs. Hiles there. Take that with him everywhere. I have a picture of Buttons in the front of my Bible. I've got a picture of Buttons the Bulldog here. Does that inspire you? No, that's not my wife. The picture of my wife's on another page. I will not touch God's anointed. I've got a picture of Buttons in the front of my Bible. Buttons was energetic. Buttons was full of energy. I mean, I'd go over to visit at my aunt's house, and old Buttons would wait at the front of the yard. And boy, when you'd show up, she'd just start running in circles. And I mean, she was a powerful dog. I enjoyed being around Buttons, full of energy, like a lotto ball bouncing everywhere. That's the way Buttons was. I would throw a ball, and Buttons would run after that ball. Buttons would run hard. And when Buttons would run after the ball, I don't know how she did it. She would go around in circles. She'd get about 50 circles, and she had a radar. Looked like she was chasing her tail, but finally she'd zoom in on that ball, swoop down, pick it up, and run back over to me. How in the world she did it while she was running in circles, I'll never know. Buttons had a shoe. It's much like this shoe. Buttons had a shoe, and that shoe was her shoe. Now, let me explain. The ball and the shoe were totally different. See, the ball was a people toy. Buttons would let people play with the ball. Buttons said, "That's my ball. You can play with my ball. I'm glad for you to play with my ball. Throw the ball. I'll chase the ball. I throw the ball. You chase the ball. That's fine." Buttons would bring the ball back to you, and it had slobber all over it. I don't mean thin slobber. I mean thick slobber. I mean, it just, the ball was drooling when Buttons would bring it back. Now, the ball was the people toy. The shoe, that was Buttons. That belonged to Buttons. That was Buttons' shoe. Buttons didn't want anybody to play with Buttons' shoe. And so, you say, how many shoes do Buttons have? One. Buttons had just one shoe. I don't know why. You say, where did Buttons get the shoe? Buttons, I believe, ate somebody, and after eating them, kept one shoe. You know, we shoot a deer, and we mount the head as a trophy. Buttons ate a person and kept the shoe as a trophy. Boy, once Buttons would sink his teeth into that shoe, as much like this one, Buttons, you couldn't get that shoe away from Buttons. I'd go over there, and I'd jump out of the car, and I'd look for that shoe, and as fast as I could, I'd run and try to grab that shoe. The mittens Buttons would see me. Buttons would run for that shoe and grab that shoe, and the tug of war was on. I would grab, Buttons would grab, I would pull, Buttons would pull. I'd begin to pull Buttons all over the place. Buttons was like a bulldozer when I was pulling that shoe. His feet were going backwards, and I was pulling him forward through the yard. Sometimes Buttons would want to take a breath. But Buttons knew if Buttons took a breath with his mouth, he'd have to suck in air, he'd have to let go of the shoe, and I'd take off running with the shoe. So he never took a breath out of the front of his face. He had jowls, you know, big floppy jaws. And he had these, I think he had little ports on the side. Because he'd have that shoe in his mouth in the front, had these little ports, and when I'm trying to get that shoe from him and he needs to breathe, he'd be sitting there going and blowing smoke and slobbering all over the place out of the sides of his mouth. I'd be pulling on that thing, and if Buttons could have talked, I know what Buttons would have been saying. He'd been saying, "That's my shoe. That's my shoe. You can't have my shoe. Go eat a person and get your own shoe. That's my shoe. Let go of my shoe, mister. I'm going to get you, mister. Let go of my shoe." I know that's what Buttons was thinking. I could pull him around. I decided one day, I'm going to get that shoe from Buttons. I started to pull Buttons through the yard. And I thought, I've got an idea. I'll pull Buttons over onto the cement. We'll pull him across the driveway for a little while, and surely that'll heat things up enough to where he'll let go of that shoe. But he wouldn't. We got out there onto the driveway. I kept pulling Buttons toward me. You could see claw marks just clawing across the driveway because Buttons would not let go of his shoe. Take him into the street. I could drag him into the gravel. Now, he made some real neat faces when you drag him in the gravel, but he wouldn't let go of a shoe. I could take Buttons around in circles. I would begin to walk around in a circle, and I'd take Buttons around me. As I would take him around in circles, Buttons would not let go of the shoe. I would get Buttons going, and we'd take the shoe, and we'd go around in a circle. And I'd shuffle my feet, and old Buttons, he would be doing the sidestep, shuffling those big old fat chubby legs, and he'd go around in circles. Sometimes, I could get Buttons airborne. I'd start doing this, and I'd get him up a little higher and a little higher. He had Buttons a helicopter, taking him around and around and around. I thought, surely, Buttons is going to get dizzy enough that he's going to drop that shoe. No, he was just like a sprinkler system. I was up there spinning him around, and slobber was going everywhere. And he was just slobbering, it was flinging out the sides, and I'd hold on to that shoe, and Buttons would hold on to that shoe. I got a good idea once. I thought, I'm going to get that shoe from Buttons. I got Buttons going around in circle, and all of a sudden I got him up good and high, and I just let go of the shoe. I thought, this is going to be good. Crash landing. Old Buttons, he hit the ground, and went poof. He wouldn't let go of that shoe. He wouldn't let go of that shoe for anything. I could go in the house and visit my aunt for a little while. I'd come back out, and Buttons was sitting in the side of the porch. He had that shoe right in his mouth, just sitting there looking at me, thinking, you dumb human, you're not going to get my shoe. You're not going to trick me. You can't come behind me. You can't come from the right or the left. I got the shoe in my mouth. Come try to get my shoe. I dare you to come try to get my shoe, you big, stupid, bad breath human. I'd go over, the minute I'd get close to him, you could see him. He's sucking that shoe in his mouth just a little further, hanging on for dear life. You know something? My family, they evidently like bulldogs. Because I have another family member that had a bulldog. They called him General Doug. Now, General Doug had a stick that belonged to him, not a shoe. It was a big, long stick. Looked like a shovel handle. And everywhere Doug went, he'd walk around with that shoe. With that stick in his mouth. And boy, he'd walk around with that stick. And one of my family members said, one day we decided we're going to get that stick from him. Two people grabbed a hold of both ends. They actually picked that dog up. That dog was hanging. They found a tree, two trees near each other, had little Y branches in them. They put one end of the stick in one Y branch, another end of the stick in the other Y branch, and that dog was just hanging there. Like a bag of potatoes hanging on a clothesline. Just hanging there going. They said he wouldn't let go. Now finally he hit the ground, but that was his stick. It belonged to him. He wasn't going to give it up for anything. You know what I think? I think in America, we need to get some bulldog Christianity. Yeah, we're going to have to get some bulldog about us. You know, some of you are going to have to learn to go after something in your Christian life and not let go. See, we live in a generation of weak-kneed people. We live in a generation of soft people. We live in a generation of sissy people. We live in a generation of quitters. You need to get some bulldog down deep inside you. I have a bulldog collar. What we need to get some of you, we need to get you a bulldog collar like this and put it on you for a little while and toughen you up just a little bit. Got a few spikes on it. Toughen you up so you can survive out there. We need some bulldog Christianity. You need to learn to sink your teeth into something and never, 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 never give up. I mean, never give up. We got quitters everywhere. They get started on something and they give up. It gets a little bit hard and they give up. Hey, there comes a little tension and they give up. I'm telling you, you need to become a bulldog for Jesus. You need to become a bulldog for the cause of Jesus Christ. You know, I think most of you want to live right. I really believe that. I don't think most of you are walking around the hallways of this church saying, I hate God. I don't want to live for God. I hate God. I think a lot of you want to live right, but you're going to have to toughen up a little bit. Can I tell you who you're going to have to toughen up on? Yourself. It's time for some of you to toughen up on yourself. If you're going to become a bulldog Christian, you're going to have to choose to do it. You need to choose to get tough with yourself.
You say, Brother Owens, I'm tired of having my mom and dad tell me what to do. I'll tell you what you can do about that. You just start telling yourself what to do, and mom and dad won't have to tell you anymore. See, Brother Owens, I'm getting tired of having my mom tell me what time to get in at night. Hey, she'd never have to tell you what time to be in at night again if you'd decide there was an appropriate time to be in, and you would grab yourself and say, look, bud, you're going to do what you're told, and I'm telling you to be home on time. Everybody's tired of being told what to do. I've got an answer for that. You grow up and decide, I will tell me what to do. And start doing that. We need to get some bulldog about us. I'm not talking about, hey, look, by the way, do it for your own good. Do it for yourself. Get tough with yourself for yourself. You won't ever regret it. You know, some of you are going to make some decisions this week, and let's not make it our get right with God for a week journey to Hammond. You know, you come here, we preach the stuffings out of you for a couple of days, and within 1 week, you're right back to the old crowd, living the old way. No, let's not do that this time. Hey, you know how camp is? You go to camp, boy, somebody gets up and preaches, and you get away from the TV, and you get away from everything, and you get to camp, and boy, the preaching's good, and you make some decisions, and boy, you sing sweet songs on the way home on the bus, and you're okay with mom and dad. You walk the aisle, maybe hit the church, but you know something? That only lasts about 2 or 3 weeks, and you're right back to the old hog pen of life, living the same old way. I say to you, let's get some bulldog about what we're doing here this week and clamp on to some things and say, I'm not letting go. I'm not going to live this just for 1 week because there are a bunch of people down there that made a decision with me. I'm living this with or without the crowd. I'm going to do right with or without any help. I'm going to grab a hold of the Christian life like Buttons grabbed a hold of that shoe, and you're not going to get away from me. I decided a long, long time ago that it didn't matter to me who did right. I was going to do right without help. I decided that when I was 16 years old. And I'm not trying to be vain or arrogant. You just check up on anybody that knows me. I don't need anybody's help to do right. I plan to do right. I plan to fight for right. Hey, if the preachers around me want to do right, good. If the preachers around me don't want to do right, that's their problem. I plan to do right. I plan to do what God called me to do. I plan to live right without my mom's help or with my mom's help. Without my dad's help or with my dad's help. Without my preacher's help or with my preacher's help. Without a friend's help or with a friend's help. I plan to do right. I put this shoe in my mouth when I was 16 years old, and I decided I don't need my crowd. I need Jesus, and I'm going to stick with him, and I know he'll stick with me. You need to get some bulldog about you. Get some bulldog about you. Well, some of you, boy, I'll tell you something, you're like a chameleon. Every time the surroundings change, you change. What some of you need to do is to make a decision to do right and then stick with it, and you grab a hold of it and don't let anybody pull that thing out of your mouth. Got to get some bulldog about you. So you need to, like a bulldog, sink your teeth into finishing high school. Finishing high school. You know, get your high school diploma. Don't be a quitter. Hey, if you've been expelled, get back up and try again. And don't be satisfied with a GED. You get your diploma. Those of you that have the privilege of going to a Christian school, don't you cop out and put your tail between your legs and run like a wounded puppy. You stay there. You tough it out. And you graduate from that Christian school. And I might throw this in here. You can be a good Christian in the public school too. Not everybody has the privilege of going to a Christian school. I did not. I did not have that privilege. I wish I would have. But I didn't get to go to the Christian school. I went to a public school. But you can live right in the public school. You just decide, I'll live right. You grab a hold of it, and you keep that thing in your mouth, and you don't let anybody shake you off. You don't need to quit school and become a welfare leech. Hey, and if some of you have quit, just go back and graduate. Last year, 1999, 3,942,000 people quit school. That's tragic. It doesn't matter how hard it is. You grab a hold of that thing, and there's some of you who debated on it. You thought, I wonder if I ought to quit school. You decide, I will graduate from high school. That's it. It's settled. If it takes me 4 years or 400 years, I'll graduate. Become a bulldog. Make yourself do it. Shake yourself and say, I'm not going to be a quitter. I'm going to keep on going no matter how hard it is. Like a bulldog, sink your teeth into finishing high school. Hey, like a bulldog, sink your teeth into remaining pure. Remaining pure. You know, folks, I hate to tell you this, but the term virgin is not a cuss word. Say a virgin. You know, it's all right to go to the wedding altar, virgin. You know, girls are supposed to get married when you're a virgin. Did you know men, by the way, we so often remind the girls of that, it is as proper for a boy to be virgin, it is a girl to be virgin, and America needs to not be afraid of the word virgin. It's not a cuss word, it's a clean word. It's God's word. We need to start going to the altar virgin again. Don't you let some whore hopping dog steal the most prized possession that you have. Girls, don't let some boy trick you out of your purity. Boys, don't let some girl tempt you out of your purity. Hey, don't date loose people. Just decide. I won't date anybody that's loose. Hey, avoid loose people like a dog avoids fleas. Like a bulldog. Grab a hold of that thing and say, I will stay pure no matter what it costs me. I'll stay pure and you're not going to get that away from me. You know, most of you shouldn't be dating anyway. You should not be dating. Let me tell you why. Because you don't love God. And nobody should be dating unless they're madly in love with Jesus Christ. Let me tell you how we can tell when you're getting a little bit closer to being mature enough to date. You see, when you're madly in love with your mama, and you're madly in love with your daddy, and you're madly in love with your God, you are finally becoming mature enough to understand what love's all about. But most of you don't love God, you don't love your mom, you don't love your dad, and you're not ready to start a relationship with some girl or with some boy. You need to sink your teeth into the goal of being pure and being virgin when you get married. And don't let anybody take that away from you. Stay pure. Hey, you're not going to stay pure on the beach. You won't stay pure flaunting your body, talking filthy, telling filthy jokes, and passing nasty love notes. You're not going to do it. You say, Brother Owens, you're old-fashioned. Well, I got news for you. The Bible's old-fashioned then. Purity's old-fashioned, and truth is old-fashioned, and honesty's old-fashioned, and godliness is old-fashioned. And though it may be old-fashioned, it's not out of date with God. Oh, but you say, Brother Owens, it's too late. I've already lost that. I'm sorry for you. The devil's a liar. And I really believe this. I think there are people in this room that weep at night and say, I wish I would have never given that up. Will you listen to me? There's hope for you. There's hope for you. Maybe you've lost something. Maybe you've made a mistake. But I've got good news. You can be pure from here on out. You can decide, I'll be pure from this day forward. Now, let me say something to some of you Pharisees. You look down your nose at somebody that made a mistake. If it were not for the grace and the mercy of Almighty God, you too would not be pure. You too would be a drunk and a drug addict. You just remember that. Hey, you're not such a hot shot. You got a hot shot God. And if there's something good about you, it's not you. It's my God being merciful to you. You grab a hold of that thing called purity and you grab it like Buttons did that shoe and say, I'm not going to let go of this thing. I'm going to stay pure no matter what it takes. Better be careful. There are some newfangled diseases out there that could kill you if you don't get some old-fashioned purity about yourself. Don't be a pansy poodle. Be a bulldog. Get some bulldog inside you. You say, I am pure, I am virgin, and I will stay that way. Or, from today forward, I will stay pure. Oh, you'll like this next point. You'll like this. Like a bulldog, sink your teeth into cleaning your room. Like a bulldog, sink your teeth into cleaning your room. Getting a little personal here, aren't we? You know one of the biggest hassles between young people and their parents is young person can't take care of their territory. We want freedom, but we can't even take care of the little space that mom and dad have given us. Don't live like an animal. Your room's not a stall. You know, I may not get you to do anything, but if I could get every young person in this room to go home and clean your room, your mom and dad would say, glory to God, revival. You'd come home and talk about being called to preach and talk about all the rest of it. Mom and dad want to see a change where you live. And where you live is where your dirty socks are right now on the floor. That's what they want to see, change now where you live. Clean your room. Did you know your mom is not your maid? She's not supposed to clean up after you. I looked it up. Did you know the word mother in the Greek does not translate into slave? Oh, no. Cleaning your room prepares you for adulthood. Are you ready for adulthood? If you can't take care of your room, how are you going to take care of a house someday? Cleaning your room prepares you for college. Cleaning your room prepares you for marriage. A woman will keep her house like she keeps her room. How you doing, sweetheart? I heard that when I was 16 years old. At that time, I was very interested in the gal that is now my wife. I didn't know any better. I went to her house when she was not at home, and I said to her mother, I said, "Would you mind terribly if I got to look at your daughter's room?" She said, "This is highly irregular." I said, "Ma'am, you're looking at a highly irregular individual." She said, "I guess so. Come on in." I went in. Boy, was I ever shocked. She pulled the closet door open. Every skirt, color, I mean, all the different blues were together, hanging together. Every top was hanging together. She pulled a little skirting back from the bed dressing, and there were all of her shoes in pairs straight across there. You could have eaten off the floor in that room, and may I say that's how she keeps my house today, and I'm glad that I married a girl that can clean up her own room. Well, I know that's not the kind of preaching that you probably came to hear, but if we could get every teenager in here just to start cleaning up your room, we'd be making some progress. Somebody told me once a messy room may be the sign of a messy heart. Make your bed. Pick up your clothes. Throw away the trash. Organize some things. Dust. You may have to wear an oxygen mask, but dust. Keep it clean. Hey, don't only just clean up the dust, you need to throw some of the trash away you've been hiding from mom and dad. When you go to cleaning, clean it out completely. Get some bulldog about you. Hey, and it's going to take bulldog for some of you to clean your room. It's going to take bulldozer. If my little preaching sermon here would help you in one thing, I could get you to go home and clean your room, and your mom and dad would see a little bit of change in you, I would feel good that a mom and dad said it was worth it to send them to that conference. Clean your room. You say, "You serious, Brother Owens? I'm as serious as a heart attack on a fat lady in July." You need to clean your room. Clean it up like a bulldog. You're going to have to tear into that thing. You know, some of you like chihuahuas, you know it? That's what you are. You're a chihuahua. You know how a chihuahua barks? Eeby, eeby, eeby. That's not even a dog. That's a rat. That's not a big rat. I like a bulldog. You know when a bulldog barks, he puts his whole body into it. It's b-woof, b-woof, eeby, eeby. Good night. Get some bulldog about you. Hey, get some bulldog about you and start living a separated life. Let me explain what happens to you. You get all inspired to live this Christian life, and you're going to go do some of the separation issues that we've told you about, but you're a little weak. When you go after it, you go after it. I didn't finally get myself right with God until I got serious about it, and I said, "You're not going to stop me. Nobody's going to stop me." One day I decided, that's it. I'll begin to live for God. This is the day I dig in. I don't back off. I don't change. And I've been running since I was 16 years old, and I'm not going to stop running. I'm going to keep on going. You say, "Well, let's try it." Don't try nothing. You jump in. Jump all the way in. You just start cleaning some things out. Decide to live like a Christian. Dress like a Christian. Walk like a Christian. Smell like a Christian. Talk like a Christian. Work like a Christian. Get some bulldog about you. Sink your teeth into being separated and do something about it. Girls, there's some clothing you need to get rid of. There's some halter tops that you just need to get rid of. Don't save them for a rainy day, okay? When you're cleaning your room, throw them all in the trash. All those form-fitting dresses and the low-cut tops. You say, "Brother Owens, I'd like to do that." Then you got to get some bulldog or some bulldogette about you. Get some bulldogette about you. Decide, "I'm going after it and I'm not going to stop until I get it." You grab a hold of it and say, "I'll do it." Some of you just need to go to your preacher and say, "Preacher, what could I do? How could I change?" And you just grab a hold of what he says and don't give up on it. Don't give up. We need to get rid of some music. Whether it's rock and roll or country or Christian rock or the contemporary, become a bulldog for Jesus. What you watch on the television, better known as the hellavision, the only way you're going to correct it is you got to get some bulldog about you. You can't passively change your life. You won't change your life by being a lazy Christian. You won't be, you won't be a good Christian if you won't give yourself to it. I just happen to believe the Christian life, you got to attack it. You got to attack it. You got to go after it. You got to want it. You know, quit making heroes out of all the people, the New World Order, and all the monkeys in the WWF. Get you some real heroes. You know, Macho Man Randy Savage ain't much man, but he's definitely savage. Get yourself fired up and decide, hey, it's time for me to really separate. I'm going to grab a hold of it, and I will not let go. Stop reading some of the filthy things that you're reading. Get rid of some of the violent video games that are packed full of rock and roll and rebellion. Separate from some things. But I tell you what you got to do. You got to be a bulldog about it. The reason why a lot of you turn around and go right back to the world is because you dabble in your Christianity. You dabble. You just take a little. Let me tell you something. Jump in. The water's fine. Like a bulldog. Sink your teeth into some things. Like a bulldog. Sink your teeth into your service for God. Get serious about soul winning. I mean, get serious about it. Quit playing around. You go play when you're supposed to be soul winning. You and your friends just out there listening to your music, driving around, doing your own thing. Get serious about it. I preached 2 weeks ago at the Hillside Baptist Church out in L.A., California. While I was there, we took the teenagers soul winning for an hour and 15 minutes. They won 976 souls. 75 teenagers. You know what? They were running to people, running from person to person to tell them about Jesus. I liked it. I liked it. I like it when people get with it when they're serving God. I love it. I'm not talking about running to play ball. Seeing one of our men here at the church earlier, one of the workers here at youth conference. His name's Brian Hassey. I used to coach Brian when Brian played soccer. Boy, was he a hustler. He played hard. He gave his best all the time. I seen him carrying some cases of pop, serving God, trying to get it out there so you could get some pop. And he was running everywhere he went. He was drenched in sweat. And I told him, I said, Brian, I love it. What we taught you on the soccer field has transferred into your Christian life. And a bunch of you boys been dribbling a basketball, but all you do is hustle on the ball court. You get out there and get busy for God. Anybody can play with the ball. The only reason we ought to have a sports program is to teach you some character so you go out and do something for God. If you have a sports program for any other reason, I just get rid of it. And if you're producing athletes that won't serve God, get rid of the program. Something's wrong. I'm trying to teach you to kick a ball or to throw a ball. Anybody can play a ball. You started playing with balls when you were a month old. You could do it. Get some toughness about you. Get some bulldog about you. Sink your teeth into something and serve God. When I was 16 years old, I started on my bus route. I was a bus captain when I was 16 years old. You know what happened? I watched some adults and I said, boy, are they lazy about this thing. I said, you know what? I want to be a bulldog bus captain. I don't want to be just an average bus captain. I want to be a bulldog bus captain. And I started working my bus route. And we averaged about 65 or 70 people every week when I was 16 years old. I decided I didn't want to be average. I'm going to grab a hold of this thing. I'm going to serve God. When I go soul winning, I'm going soul winning. When I work on my bus route, I'm going to build my bus route. It's time for some of you to quit playing in the kitty litter and come on out with the big dogs. Stay in that litter for long, they're going to bury you there, son. The teenagers of First Baptist Church won 9,301 souls in their 1999 soul winning marathon. I didn't say in 1999, at a one-day marathon, almost 10,000 souls. And you know what? They got up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and did without food, and they hustled all day long. Why? Because they said, I'm going to be a bulldog about my soul winning. I'm going to get something done for God. I remember one week this last year, we got our family together in family devotions and counted up how many souls we had won between the six of us. We had 402 people saved in 1 week in our family, in our personal soul winning. We get fired up about the things of God. Why don't we decide I'm going to grab a hold of my service for God and I'm not going to let it go? Get faithful to the church services and quit making up excuses. You know, if I ever started a church, I've picked the name. I'm going to call it the Bulldog Baptist Church. Like a bulldog, grab a hold of something that means something to you and go after it and don't let it go. You know, some of you need to sink your teeth into God's calling for your life. Some of you young men, you've been called to preach. You've surrendered your life to preach. I'm getting real tired of traveling the country, preaching at conferences, having young men called to preach, and going back the next year, and they change their mind. Or they never show up at college to get trained. And you listen to me, every one of you young men in this building, if you stood up and surrendered your life to preach the gospel, you are now signed on the dotted line, and you can't back off. You're not to give up. You're not to get out. You're to get on with it. Every one of you. Some of you fellows have been called to preach. You just did it because you say, well, Brother Owens, everybody around me was doing it. But I got news for you. You're signed up now, and you're not to quit. You're to keep on going. You know what the devil does? He comes along, and he sees that shoe in your mouth. Some of you are going to get tough. You say, that's it. I'm going to get tough about this thing. I'm going to get tough about the calling of God on my life. You say, you stick that shoe in your mouth, and I'll guarantee you the devil's going to come over and try to knock that shoe out of your mouth. He's going to try to knock it out of your mouth. Well, I could tell you story after story of things that I think the devil was behind, trying to knock me out of the ministry, trying to keep me from serving God, trying to get me discouraged, trying to get me to back off, trying to get me to keep my mouth shut, trying to get me to just ease up a little bit. He comes around, he slaps you around, and he beats on you for a little while, and I'm telling you, it's not always pleasant, but you just decide, I've already grabbed a hold of the shoe of serving God, and nothing is going to take it out of my mouth. I wouldn't want to be anything but a Baptist preacher. Don't change what you are. Hey, every man in this building that's been called to preach, stand up for a second. Stand up. If you've been called, and I'm talking about every young man, every old man, every halfway in between man, stand up if you've been called to preach. Let me tell you something. You take the shoe of the call to preach, and you sink your teeth into it, and don't you back off. Don't you ever back off. Don't you forget you're a Baptist, and don't you let anybody knock that shoe out of your mouth. Don't you forget you're a separatist Baptist, and don't you let anybody knock that shoe out of your mouth. Don't you forget you're a fundamentalist, and don't let anybody knock that shoe out of your mouth. Don't you forget you carry a King James Bible, and don't let anybody knock that out of your mouth. Hey, guess what? I'm a Hiles boy, and you're not going to knock that shoe out of my mouth. Some of you need to toughen up a little bit and realize what you are, and don't be apologetic for what you are. I'm a preacher of the gospel, and I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of what I stand for. I'm not ashamed of the one that I stand for. And it's time for some of you preachers to get a little grit in your crawl and decide you're not ashamed of being a Baptist preacher. Every young man, hey, and if you've been called to preach and you're a young man and you're sitting down right now, you're pathetic. You should have got up with the rest of the men. Put your tail between your legs and run. You can have a seat. Sink your teeth into God's calling on your life. Some of you have surrendered to the mission field. I'm worried about you. I'm worried about you. Because you know what some of you are going to do? You're going to say, well, that was just an emotional decision. The word I'm interested in is decision. Decision. You made a decision. You can't back out on God. Don't you be a coward. Don't you give up. If you've been called to the mission field, you go to the mission field. If you've been called to the mission field, you keep your eyes set on that goal and you say, I'm going to grab a hold of that thing. And nobody's going to take it away from me. Don't you let somebody talk you out of that. Some of you have surrendered yourself to being a Christian school teacher. You decided that. You surrendered your life. Now, don't you let anything take that away from you. You sink your teeth into it and you say, I will not be moved. I'll be that Christian school teacher. Some of you ladies surrendered your life to be a preacher's wife. You made that decision. You said, I am going to be a preacher's wife. Well, then don't you be satisfied with anything less than that. If that's what you decided, then that's what you become. Well, we got a generation of people that just, they're Indian givers. They give their life to Christ and then they want to take it back. And most of you have been called to full-time service. I know some of you haven't. Bunch of, hey, over 200 of you surrendered to God last night. Well, listen to me. If you surrendered, you grab a hold of the shoe of full-time service and you don't back off for anybody. You don't change for anybody. You know, you say, well, I decided to be a dental hygienist instead of a missionary. You don't even floss your own teeth. How are you going to tell somebody else to floss theirs? You surrendered your life to God, you give your life to God. We used to have a dog. She was a wiener dog. Her name was Mitzi. Every time I walked in the house, Mitzi stooped down and wet on the floor. She's scared to death of me. Just scared. I affect some of you that way, don't I? You listen to me. You can try to ignore it. You can run from God. But some of you have given your life to God and you can't get away with that. I'm telling you, you're not going to get away from it. You're going to, hey, some of you are going to try to go to sleep tonight and what I've said is going to haunt you. Because you said, well, I changed my mind. Well, God hadn't changed His mind. Grab a hold of it. Don't let go of it. That means you need to go to a Bible college. What kind of Bible college? A Bible college that's full of bulldog preachers. That's what you need. You don't need to go to a college that's got chihuahua preachers. EB. If we ever rename Hiles Anderson College, I think we ought to call it Bulldog Baptist College. Get some bulldog about you. I remember once I was watching the television. I was over at Brother Eddie's house. I was in a hotel room. And I got to watch a little bit in earlier in the day of a marathon run. It's been many, many years ago. And I was watching the marathon runners. They took off and I had to leave to go and preach a meeting. I came back later on. And right before I left, a man had fallen and he had injured himself. And you could see paramedics there and everything. And when I got home about 2.5 hours later, a clip came on the news. And that clip was of the Colosseum where they were coming back from the marathon. It was at night. There was a small crowd of people at the entrance of the thing, and they had some lights at the entrance. I couldn't figure out what they were doing, but all of a sudden, you seen a light and a man running like this. That man had broken his leg, and the bone was actually protruding out of his flesh. His whole leg was blood red. His sock was red, and his running shoe was red. And I watched that guy hobble on in, and that little crowd go crazy. I stood up in my hotel room and I was screaming and yelling, saying, "That's it, that's it, that's it, that's it." You know why? That guy said, "I'm going to run a marathon, and there ain't nobody going to stop me from running a marathon. I said I was going to cross the finish line. I'm going across the finish line, and nobody's going to stop me. If I'm hurt, I'll run hurt." There's some of you need to get some of that down inside you. I'm worried about our country. We're scared to death to play hard. We're scared to death to give our all. I'm going to give my all. I want to give it to Jesus Christ. I'm a winner that way every single time. There's a story in the Old Testament. It's found in 2 Samuel 23. A story about a man named Eleazar. He was one of David's mighty men. He was a fighting machine. He was in battle with a group of people called the Philistines. You remember Goliath the Philistine, probably over 9 feet tall. Eleazar had been fighting this kind of people all day long, from sunup to sundown. He was one tough dog. I mean, he was tough. He had fought viciously all day long. He had fought with a sword. Bible says he had fought so hard all day long. At the end of the day, when the battle was over, he went and retreated to his tent. While he was in his tent, he went to lay the sword down on his cot. But he couldn't. The Bible says he had like a Charlie horse. His hand was clamped around that sword and he couldn't get it out of his hand. He couldn't move it out of his hand. There wasn't anything that he could do about it. That thing was stuck in his hand. He tried to take his other hand and pry that sword out. Couldn't get it out. He couldn't pull it out of his hand. One of his buddies probably came in and said, "Hey, Eleazar, what are you doing?" He said, I can't believe it. I can't get the sword out of my hand. I've fought with it. I've defended right with it. I've struggled. I've been attacked. I've been beat. I've been hurt. But I can't get the sword out of my hand." Right there it is. There it is. Right there is the sword. Get it in your hand. Everybody get it in your hand. Get it in your hand right now. Clamp onto it tight. Hold it up in the air. You hold on to that thing. You hold on to that thing. No matter what happens to you, no matter what comes, no matter what anybody does, you grab a hold of that and say, "I'm going to be a bulldog Christian. I'm not going to back off. I'm not going to shut up. I'm not going to change. I'm going to live for Jesus Christ. I'm a bulldog Christian. I'm a bulldog Christian." Hey, let your hand cleave to that sword right there. there. Don't you ever let anybody knock that Bible out of your hand. You fight for it. You die for it. And you live for it.
If I can have this center mic back, please. I have in my Bible a picture of Buttons. Buttons, a bulldog. You say, why is that there, Brother Owens? I want to be reminded of the dog that just won't quit. I'm going to give you a picture of Buttons, a bulldog. Ushers, if you'll come, they're going to give you a picture of Buttons. So you'll have a picture of Buttons. Put it in. Hurry, fellas. You put it in your Bible. You can tape it in there by the picture of your wife. Like mine is. Don't you ever forget about bulldog Christianity. That's what we need. Some good old-fashioned bulldog Christianity. Just don't quit.